Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. President Trump has changed how presidents communicate with reporters, preferring impromptu Q&A sessions before boarding Marine One over formal press conferences. Those sessions, filled with the pulsing of helicopter rotor blades in the background, often dominate the daily news cycle. But should they? SDPB's Kevin Wooster asks about how reporters cover the president on his blog this week. It's called On the Other Hand, and you can find it online at sdpb.org/Wooster. Kevin Wooster joins us on the phone today from Rapid City. Hey, Kevin, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back. This blog was something that I almost did a Facebook thing on, and I kind of struggle whether I'm going to do a little quick burst on Facebook or try and turn it into a blog, And after I had this moment with a text exchange that started it all off with a couple of political thinkers that I know, and one of them suggested that what would happen if the press just stopped covering these? And when we say press, we mean people outside the traditional press, broadcast news and everything, stop covering these things. Mm-hmm. And my initial reaction was, could be better for America, for the nation.
So if people haven't seen, I think everybody has seen and is fairly familiar, walk us through a little bit. You used to have a different kind of press conference with previous presidents. There was a precedent and a tradition that Donald Trump has really gone away from.
He really has, and you can say that he's more accessible because he is. I mean, he's actually quite accessible, more so probably than past presidents in my lifetime in terms of the number of times he's opens himself up to questions, but they are so often in these situations that are all to his advantage. And the one we think about most is this very common scene with him standing near the Marine chopper that's going to take him somewhere with the rotors going and the motor roaring and kind of sometimes the wind blowing his hair around and reporters yelling questions. And unlike a normal press conference where you sit down and there's a sequence and you're indoors and everybody can hear and everybody's reasonably comfortable, and he calls on a reporter when a reporter raises his or her hand and then gets called upon, then they ask a question that the president doesn't know what that question is going to be. In these situations, they're all in these chopper talk things or chopper shout things. They're all screaming these questions at him over the roar of the helicopter. And then he gets to decide which one he wants to answer and which ones he wants to ignore. And then he gets to decide if he's going to take a second question from that reporter and move on to the next one. So he can pick his favorite questions, his favorite reporters. He can pick the issue of the day that he's interested in talking about and ignore the ones he isn't. And so it's all to his advantage. And I think I've even read that he likes the lighting outside better for himself than he does the lighting in a closed room environment. And of course, he's all about TV images and projection and things like that. So yeah. Much different than a traditional news conference.
And I think it's important to note that when you're asking a question in a situation like you and I are in, for example, the question can be nuanced. There can be layers to it. If you have to shout it over, I mean, you really have to ask a very brief, very sort of one-dimensional question, don't you?
You do. It really limits what you can do in terms of context or framing the question in advance or making something clear that you want to ask about. And a lot of the D.C. folks that do this all the time in a news conference setting are really good at that. And it's a thing where then they can push an issue a little bit more, and then another reporter can pick up that issue and continue that. So there's an opportunity to really examine things when the president can't decide which question he's going to take and which reporter he's going to call on. And he can do some of that in a regular news conference, but he's got a more of an advantage in these chopper talk things. And, you know, the question is, how useful are they really? And that's kind of the thing that I wanted to look at here is there a time when he just goes off topic, when he just ignores the issue of the day that somebody else might want to ask about, and then does all the things where he, you know, criticizes his predecessors, which he does unmercifully and relentlessly, and attacks other people. So the question are twofold. Should reporters ever consider just not doing that? And should they also consider just not covering some of the things he said, which are, you know, often offensive and have, to me, often no real news value.
All right. So let's talk about that, because that's a big question to sort of say, you know, there has been a responsibility, there has been, and really so much of this presidency has changed a lot of the traditions and had people on their heels trying to figure out, you know, how do you deal with a comment that in the past, it almost seems like reporters were trying to catch a public official or a president or a member of Congress in that, member of Congress in one of those unguarded moments where they would say something flippantly. It was almost that was the got. Now, with this president, everything is sort of an off-the-cuff potential gotcha. Now what? So what do you think? Would the country really be better off if the press stopped showing up chopper side?
Well, I have to say there's a part of me that would just love it sometimes if he goes on these tangents that are just personal attacks on whoever he decides to attack that day. If everybody would just shut the cameras off and close the notebooks and say, thank you, Mr. President, turn and walk away. But that doesn't necessarily serve the purpose and show the professionalism of the business. The question is, do you have to report all of it? Do you have to show all the time how mean-spirited he can be and how, you know, racially tinged sometimes he can be and how personally offensive he can be on some people and how self, you know, fulfilling all of his comments can be, where he says no other president has ever done this like I have and nobody has ever accomplished this like I have. Should that really be part of the narrative anymore? Maybe it should be, and I know some people that love Trump would love hearing him say that. But if it's not actual news, if it doesn't actually have to do with the nuts and bolts of an agreement with another country or with a budget issue in Washington or with a court decision, how much of this other theater, this, I think in there I called it sometimes a combination of the Duck Dynasty and The Apprentice, how much of Showtime, courtesy of Donald Trump, should we really expose people to, I guess? And that's a question that I think is legitimate, because I think you and I touched on it. Will you avoid the most crazy stuff, the most factually incorrect stuff? Are you normalizing that by letting it not be discussed and not be reported? Are you just saying, okay, well, we're just going to let that go? I think that's a fair question.
Or if you, say every day, this is the comment that, the president said about his predecessor. This is the comment he said about the media day in and day out. Is there a fatigue at some point where people say, well, you know, yeah, we know this president doesn't like the press, big deal, whereas it might be a big deal as we deal with issues of the First Amendment and access to the president?
And I think that's a hard one, because my inclination is always to say, well, set your egos aside. So he hates you. He hates us. If he really does, you never know with him whether it's a game or whether it's his legitimate feelings. We should just leave that alone. We know he thinks we're the enemy of the people, or pretends he thinks that. We don't need to report it when he takes the next cheap shot at the media. On the other hand, it is the First Amendment to a certain extent we're talking about here. And if the goal of the president, and he has goals, I mean, he has goals. Nobody that I've been around, first of all, can dominate the news media like he has. Nobody that I've ever watched on any national scale as a president or some other elected official can dominate the news cycle like he can. And I think nobody has a more specific goal in that domination than he does. And one of those main goals is to undermine, you know, mainstream media. And so if he's doing that, do we let that go, or do we point that out? And does it sometimes seem like we're just inflating ourselves and trying to protect ourselves, or are we trying to protect something greater than ourselves, being the First Amendment?
What sort of feedback did you get, you know, sort of the over the coffee cup or the texting conversation with some of the people who are concerned about this or engaged in the conversation? What kind of feedback did you get about the very idea of whether or not these sort of impromptu press conferences should dominate the daily news cycle?
Well, mixed. I have a wide variety of friends in a political spectrum, and some of the people that I contact regularly by social media or in person are Trump lovers, and they feel like the mainstream media has had the advantages for years, especially on conservatives. You know, that's their That's their feeling, and that this merely brings things back to a more level playing field where the president knows how to fight and knows how to win, and he is fighting and winning in their mind against what they consider to be the liberal, biased mainstream media. And so they like it. Other people obviously hate it. If you hate Trump, you hate this. If you love Trump, you love this. And people that are in between, I think, are wrestling with the kind of questions that, frankly, I'm wrestling with right now. Not that I have to deal with it personally myself, but, you know, on a lesser level, we dealt with that to a certain extent with Bill Janklow, when he would be combative in news conferences and he would throw out all kinds of facts and figures. And, you know, he was a much better informed person than Donald Trump ever is, much better read, much more respectful of process than Donald Trump is. But he could challenge you and get you off track and things. And the one thing with him you had to remember was, don't take it personally. And I think sometimes the national news folks take things too personally, and I wish they wouldn't. But on the other hand, if you're attacked all the time, I can understand why you start to protect yourself a little bit too. So,
do you think that journalists
nothing like Trump?
Yeah. Do you think that journalists in general? I was reading something this morning from Poynter where they were talking about just some of the personal scrutiny, personal attacks that the administration and is sort of going after individual reporters, saying, "Hey, you know, there's some misconduct from this person," and the folks from, I can't remember if it was the New York Times or the Washington Post, were saying, "Yeah, we're not above scrutiny, and if we find out that one of our journalists is, you know," now, not a smear campaign, but if they have done something unethical, we're going to deal with it appropriately. Do you think that there was somewhat of an arrogance in the news media, too, to think that, and this is a bit of a correction or a right-sizing of the role at all? Do you see people kind of cheering for Trump in that way, saying it's about time somebody said, hey, how you do your job matters?
I certainly think we should always be saying that, and I think it's fair that the people that consume news, particularly if they're actually willing to pay for it one way or the other, say that. It's certainly fair when people we cover say that, and that we look at ourselves. I think there are times, obviously, I always tell people when they talk about fake news, mostly news that isn't perfect isn't fake, it just isn't perfect, and that's because it's put out by people, and we aren't perfect. But that I think it's only fair that you look at stories, and if you can see a pattern where somebody seems to be imbalanced in the way they're covering this president, maybe has a personal agenda against this president, certainly that's fair. That's fair game, and people should guard against that if they are the people that cover him every day, because I think there could be an inclination to do that. So you have to be careful about it.
And then we also have, looking at some of the folks who are running to be the Democratic challenger to the president, Beto O'Rourke recently took a little bit of a public lashing for kicking a Breitbart reporter out of an event and had to apologize. And, you know, I know Elizabeth Warren was talking about, you know, not going on certain channels because it was just, and I think Beto talked about, you know, Breitbart hate speech. And so are we redefining who a journalist is? Donald Trump has certainly picked his favorite journalists in the past. What are your thoughts about not only, you know, where those conversations happen, but who's allowed into the room to ask some of those questions when you're on the campaign trail?
That's a tough question because, some of my conservative friends send me links to Breitbart stuff all the time, and I rarely read it. And I usually tell them, send me Fox, that's fine. Send me National Review, that's fine. I read that stuff all the time. I'm not going to read Breitbart. So I think there is such a clear agenda there. I think that if you look at Fox News, there are some really exceptional reporters on Fox News. There are commentators that kind of go off the edge sometimes, just as there are on MSNBC and CNN the other way. But Fox News has some good news people on it. And to me, it's overall a fairly normal news outlet. And I don't think Breitbart is. So I would struggle with that. And yet, how do you define what a reporter is these days? How it used to be pretty easy. Now it's an ongoing, changeable creature of the times. And I'm always a little shocked when I see these panels on the cable news networks, and they're saying they're a political chief for some thing that I've never heard of. And I don't know where you start and where you end if you're a political candidate. I wasn't as offended by the Breitbart thing as I would have been if he'd have kicked Fox News out. I think that would have been way over the line. But
well, we had the conversation in South Dakota with the shield law that Governor Christie proposed in the debate of whether bloggers were counting as reporters and, yep. you know, who's in and who's out. So some of these conversations are pretty good to have in some ways. And here's I'm also wondering this. When you look at how the president has sort of redefined the way he communicates with the American people, and people have written about that in a variety of ways, critical and celebratory, when you look at the Democrats who are running, are any of them sort of making a redefinition of their own and stepping into a similar mold, not in their persona or their policy, but in their communication? Who's really looking at that innovation and getting some of those headlines through some of the controversies similar to what we saw candidate Donald Trump? Does anyone come to mind there?
Well, they're all using it to one degree or another, or at least in a number of the major ones that I've seen. But I certainly haven't seen anybody that has the power on social media that this president does.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's another question that we've discussed and debated. Jokingly, I think Corey Heidelberger got on, a blogger, got on there when Tony Van Huysen, who used to be the chief of staff of the governor and now is in private law practice, made a comment about the good and the bad of Donald Trump's tweets. And I asked, could you get on as a debater and argue the affirmative side on what's good about Donald Trump's tweets? And so then we went back and forth about that. But I think you love it if you're a Trump fan, because as the quote-unquote, he gets to bypass the mainstream media and speak directly to the people. Well, and he also loses his mind a little bit on Twitter fairly regularly, and at times hurts himself, I think, and at times helps himself. Would Donald Trump be better off if he just got off Twitter? I tend to think so. But on the other hand, it's an amazing, as Tony Van Huysen points out, it's an amazing look at what a president is thinking on just about hourly basis. So,
do you think it's him every time? Do you think it's the president himself every time? When you look at some corporations and the way they sort of clapping back on Twitter things that you wouldn't normally do with a brand are sort of switching there's different corporations, you know, Wendy's, and, you know, their Twitter feed has, you know, done this funny joke that makes news. Sometimes I wonder, and we only have about 30 seconds, you know, how much of that is the president and how much of that is sort of this behind-the-scenes machine that's churning?
Sure, and I'm sure there's some of that. But we've been having that for years. When these new things with a column by our congressional members show up in the local paper, did they write it, or did their chief of staff, or did their communications director write it? Who knows? Did they give the quotes that are used, or did somebody else come up with them for them?
Are they spelling things wrong on purpose, Kevin? Are they spelling things wrong on purpose, or is that just okay, we'll leave it there. We'll talk more. You can find that blog on sdpb.org/Wooster. Hey, Kevin, thanks so much.
My pleasure.